You may not have heard much about private equity companies, names like Blackstone, Carlyle, and KKR, but there's a good chance they've had an impact on your life. Private equity has taken over businesses in retail, nursing homes, car rentals, healthcare, veterinary care, housing, the list goes on. And our next guest says they mostly change things for the worse. In his new book, he's spreading the word that massive, lucrative, often predatory, and relatively unknown financial firms are dramatically transforming our entire economy, our entire country. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you know about the private equity industry? Have you encountered it in one way or another? What do you want to know? Did you work at Shopko or Toys R Us before they closed down? They're big parts of this story. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Brendan Belew is a federal prosecutor and served as special counsel for private equity in the Justice Department's Antitrust Division. In his book and here on the air, he is not speaking on behalf of the Justice Department. His new book is called Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. Brendan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, private equity, not necessarily a household phrase. Big picture, what is it?
So private equity is a term that maybe you've heard of, but if I think we're honest, many of us didn't actually know what it meant. And I have to confess, I didn't know really what it was until I started this project. The basic idea is very simple. Private equity firms use a little bit of their own money, some investor money, and a whole lot of borrowed money to buy up companies. They then make various financial and operational changes to those companies with the aim of selling them for a profit a few years later. It's a pretty simple idea, but for reasons that we can discuss, it often leads to bad outcomes for companies, for customers, and for employees.
Right. I can hear a good version of this story where, okay, this big company, it's struggling, poorly managed maybe. Here comes the private equity company, buys it, makes it more efficient, healthier, sells it off, everybody wins. The case you're making in your book is that is not usually what actually happens.
Yeah, and I don't want to overstate my case. There are many private equity deals that, you know, turn out successfully for, you know, not just investors, but for the companies themselves. But there are some basic problems with the private equity business model that lead to bad consequences very often. Very quickly, they are private equity firms tend to buy and hold the companies for just a few years, so they have a very short-term focus. They tend to load up the companies they buy with a lot of debt and extract a lot of fees. And most importantly, and this is the part that interests me as a lawyer, and again, I thank you for caveating that I'm speaking in a personal capacity and not necessarily that the opinion of the Justice Department. What's really interesting is they're very good at insulating themselves from liability for actions that they take or that their portfolio companies take. So when you have that combination of short-term focus, a lot of debt and fees, and limited legal liability, it often leads to bad results.
Can you talk us through the scope of private equity? I gave a few examples of industries, but how widespread are these kind of companies and the companies that they end up buying?
Private equity surrounds you. PE firms spent over $1 trillion buying companies last year. And just for a sense of scale, the entire U.S. GDP was about $25 trillion last year. You already touched on some examples, but if you go to a veterinary clinic or an OBGYN practice, if you buy clothes, pet food, or contact lenses, in some cities, the very water that you drink is provided by a private equity firm. I always joke that if you read my book, the private equity is literally right in front of you because the font that we use is owned and licensed by a private equity-owned portfolio company.
Let's look at a particular case with a lot of relevance here in Wisconsin. The business Shopko, now out of business. There's a spinoff eye care firm called Shopko Optical, but it's pretty much gone. And the examples you give in the story of Shopko are pretty common in a lot of these private equity buyouts, starting with some of the decisions made soon after a company gets bought. Can you talk us through Shopko and how it represents the wider story?
Absolutely. And Shopko is near and dear to my heart as a place that I, you know, went to a lot in southern Minnesota and Wisconsin growing up. So, you know, Shopko was bought by the private equity firm Sun Capital in 2006 or 2007. And then Sun Capital executed a number of tactics that are pretty common within the industry. For one thing, they executed what's called a sale leaseback, where they required Shopko to sell all of the real estate of the stores that they own and lease those stores back. That's a tactic that gave Shopko and its private equity owner a quick hit of cash, but now it meant that Shopko had to essentially indefinitely pay for something that it used to own. Sun Capital then executed a bunch of transaction fees and management fees, essentially fees that Shopko had to pay for the privilege of being owned by Sun Capital, as well as, I believe, executing what's called a dividend recapitalization, where essentially Shopko had to borrow money to pay Sun Capital and its other investors. All these tactics were tremendously successful for Sun Capital, the private equity owner, but as you know and many of your listeners do, it ultimately pushed up Shopko itself into bankruptcy, and it essentially no longer exists as a business.
Talking to Brendan Belew about his new book, Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. Maybe your experiences if you worked for Shopko or Toys R Us or another business that's no longer in business after being purchased by a private equity company. Join in at 800-642-1234. Brendan, one thing that always baffles me in some of these private equity deals is, okay, I'm a private equity company. I'm buying company X over here. Some of the money I'm using to buy it ends up as a loan held by that company I just bought. So me buying it saddled that company with a lot of debt. How does that work? How does it impact the company?
It's a great question. And it's this sort of financial magic trick that private equity firms are able to do. So as I mentioned at the outset, and as you alluded to in your question, when private equity firms buy up companies, they use a lot of debt. But the really interesting thing is it's debt that the acquired company, not the private equity firm, typically holds. So in the case of when Carlyle buys the nursing home chain HCR ManorCare, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, it did so for about $6 billion. Most of that was money that ManorCare had to hold on to rather than Carlyle. And as a result, ManorCare spent a lot of money just paying the cost of servicing the debt, which makes it harder for it to invest in facilities, invest in staff, and so forth.
Let's talk about what this means for different groups of people. First of all, employees. In case after case you give after a company is bought in this way, often they're sort of pension washed. Pensions that people may have counted on after working for a company for a long time disappear or go to another service. What happens?
So it's a really fascinating story. I'll give a quick example of when actually the same private equity firm, Sun Capital, bought up the diner chain Friendly's, which, you know, serve classic hamburgers and milkshakes and so forth. Friendly executed a lot of the same tactics that we were talking about sale leasebacks and so forth, and ultimately pushed Friendly's into bankruptcy. But Sun Capital wasn't just Friendly's owner. It was also Friendly's largest lender. And by doing that, in a bankruptcy process, normally the lenders sort of get control of the company. Sun Capital was able to sell Friendly's from itself to itself. And the reason that it did that is by doing so in the bankruptcy process, Friendly's was able to push off the pension obligations that Friendly's owned onto what's called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a quasi-government agency that insures pensions. And so the result of that was that Sun Capital was allowed to keep a business that it had bankrupted, but it was able to lose the pension obligations that Friendly's employees and retirees depended on.
Then impact on consumers. And I want to focus in on one particular industry, care facilities. The senior care facilities sometimes end up in the hands of these private equity companies, and you write about reports of declines in care over time. What happens?
So I alluded to this in answering one of your earlier questions. Carlyle bought up the nursing home chain ManorCare and loaded up with debt, executed sale leasebacks. Ultimately, health code violations spiked, and at least one resident died. The interesting thing is when the resident's family sued for wrongful death, Carlyle was able to get the case against it dismissed, essentially by saying that it wasn't the technical owner of the nursing home chain. Instead, it merely advised a series of funds whose limited partners through several shell companies ultimately owned the nursing home chain. And that was enough to get the case against Carlyle dismissed. And I think it illustrates that point we were making, that oftentimes private equity firms insulate themselves from liability or for the consequences of their actions. And just to put a pin on that, there's been some really interesting research, because nursing homes are incredibly popular for private equity firms to buy. At least by one estimate, private equity firm ownership of nursing homes is responsible for over 20,000 premature deaths over a 15-year period.
We're talking to Brendan Belew about his new book. It's called Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, with your experience. If you worked at a place or were a customer of a business that you relied on that was taken over by a private equity company, did it go well or poorly for you? Is your landlord one of these private equity companies? We'll get to your calls and some suggested changes that our guest has in mind. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about private equity companies with Brendan Belew. He's a federal prosecutor. His new book is called Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Mike joins us now in Slinger. Mike, hi.
Hi, Rob. I'm familiar with the veterinary clinics. I heard that on public radio. In a lot of small towns, they buy them up and then they run a bankrupt and then there's no vet left in the town. But my comment is that I think about 6 months ago, Kohl's went through this very thing with some private equity firm trying to buy them out. And somehow they fought them off. They wanted to put someone on the board. The equity company did. And they fought them off. But I remember them saying specifically that they wanted to rent the stores back to Kohl's. And your guest just mentioned that before, that's what happened to Shopko, and they just drain them. So I just thought I'd make that as a comment.
Mike, thanks for that call. Yeah, I see WPR reported on that that very thing you're talking about, Mike. Thanks for sharing that. I want to mention Mike's other comment, Brendan, about veterinary clinics. I wouldn't think that would be a huge investment opportunity, but what is happening in that field, Brendan?
It's really interesting. Private equity is really attracted to veterinary clinics. And in fact, I think the largest veterinary chains in America are all owned by private equity firms now. I think veterinary clinics present a couple of opportunities for PE firms. One is, you know, sort of during and after quarantine, pet ownership and spending on pets really rose dramatically, so they see it as a growth industry. It's also a fairly dispersed industry right now, and so I think private equity firms see it as a way to potentially roll up different businesses and combine them under one umbrella. That potentially has sort of benefits of scale, but it also potentially could raise prices for consumers or cut salaries for veterinarians and lab technicians. And in fact, the FTC just recently enjoined a recent private equity acquisition of a veterinary chain. So it's something clearly that PE is interested in.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mike joins us now in Marshall. Mike, hello.
Excuse me, I'm just cleaning up from No Mo Me.
I feel anyway, you, man.
I worked for Shopko, and I could almost believe that there was a layer of ripoff going before Sun Capital reared its head. But then when they showed up, it was obvious that they were running the place into the ground. There was places being bought, and they'd try and staff them. There wasn't any business, and they were just, you know, there was just some game being played down in Florida, but it didn't really bother me because I was headed to greener pastures.
Mike, thanks for calling and sharing that experience with us. Brendan, yeah, Shopko not in great shape before that buyout by Sun. How does somebody make money, as Mike says, running this business into the ground?
Well, sometimes, you know, it's a genuine effort to turn a company around and see if they can make a profit from it. But oftentimes, or at least sometimes, private equity firms can, you know, make money by essentially selling the business for parts. You know, in a case of Marsh Supermarkets, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, the private equity firm, I think, realized that the assets of the real estate were worth more than the business itself. So they acquired it, sold the real estate, made their money back, and essentially just had a a grocery chain to boot, you know, that was just sort of a cherry on top. It all means that, you know, sometimes private equity firms' interests are aligned with the companies they buy, but not always. And that seems to be what happened with Shopko.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Brenda joins us now in Menominee. Brenda, hi.
Hi. Well,
what did you want to bring up, Brenda?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, why is it that these companies allow themselves to be bought by these private equity firms? Do they have a choice in the matter? What's in it for them?
Good question. Brendan.
Brenda, it's a great question. So sometimes, you know, a private equity firm can be genuinely helpful in sort of injecting capital into a business and so forth. I will say that oftentimes private equity acquisitions, you know, whether they work or not for the acquired company, can be extremely valuable for the executives of the company that's bought. You know, a lot of these executives are compensated in part or primarily in stock or other equity in the business. And so, you know, a buyout is an opportunity for those folks to cash out.
Brenda, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Brendan Belew about his new book, Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. Evan joins us next in Viroqua. Evan, hi.
Hi. My question, I don't know if it pertains to this. I don't know if private equity is involved or not. But years ago, Kmart was struggling, and they were going to go through bankruptcy. And then the next thing I heard, they bought Sears, a bigger company than them. So, like, how does that work?
Evan, thanks for the call. Brendan, I don't know if that particular story was private equity, but you write it's very common for a private equity company to merge different companies in the same line of business.
Yeah, it's a great question, Evan. You know, I believe the Kmart story was ultimately would be classified more as a hedge fund. And just to make the distinction clear, you know, hedge funds tend to invest in securities, stocks, bonds, and so forth. Private equity firms tend to buy whole companies. It's not a clear legal distinction, but that's sort of a rough division of labor there. So as you were saying, private equity firms often have a strong interest in mergers and acquisitions. And I already sort of touched on this a little bit when we were talking about veterinary clinics, but a lot of times private equity firms are interested in what are called roll-up opportunities. So these are chances to buy up businesses in a dispersed industry, combine them, and then, you know, potentially get efficiencies of scale, but also, you know, potentially, you know, raise prices or lower wages and things like that. So potentially we're seeing that happen in veterinary clinics, but we've seen it happen in all sorts of industries. In healthcare, for instance, there's really interesting reporting on private equity firms getting interested in buying up small practices or clinics, OBGYN practices, oncology practices, urgent care, dermatology, and so forth. There's really interesting stories out there about private equity firms, after they bought dermatology clinics, were essentially making medical supply decisions on behalf of doctors. And at least according to one story, were buying needles that were so cheap that they would break off in people's arms. Now, that's, yeah, pretty scary stuff. That's certainly not what always happens, but it is a common tactic of private equity firms. So it's a very good point.
Thanks for that call, Evan. I want to take our last few minutes, Brendan, on solutions you offer. You say it might be an uphill battle because the government, Congress, the White House has made it pretty easy to do these things. But you say there's room for some substantial changes. What kind of things would be at the top of your agenda?
So it goes back to the basic problems that we've got with the private equity business model. You know, short-term thinking, a reliance on debt and fees, and insulation from liability. And if you can solve those problems, private equity can be made to be a useful part of our financial system. You know, I always say as long as companies need, you know, to build factories and hire new workers, there needs to be somebody willing to take the bet and make the investment on that. Now, how do we do that? Congress can obviously pass legislation to address some of those flaws. But, you know, we live in a time of a divided Congress. And truthfully, there are a lot of other sort of levers of power where things can happen, whether we're talking about at the federal level, agencies like the Securities and Exchange Commission, Health and Human Services, Treasury Department, Federal Reserve, and so forth, can act. But also states and localities can, you know, modify their laws to make it harder to do some of the more extractive tactics that private equity firms do. So So all of which is to say that there's a lot that can be, that should be done, and there are a lot of different ways that we could do it. So I think that there is some reason for optimism here.
Now, because these companies, they're huge, but they're not necessarily visible on a daily basis, are you hopeful that everyday people might look at this and advocate for some of the changes you're calling for?
Absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, people, whether they perceive it consciously or not, are affected by private equity every day. And there's a lot that ordinary people can do, whether it's, you know, getting involved in a specific organization and just Google private equity and, you know, you'll see some of the names that pop up, to just making your voice heard. I really can't emphasize enough, you know, how much hearing stories about how people are affected can really affect, you know, bureaucrats in Washington like me or, you know, people that are trying to make positive change.
Brendan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Brendan Belew, federal prosecutor who served as special counsel for private equity in the Justice Department's antitrust division. Again, he's not speaking for the Justice Department in this conversation. We talked with him about his new book. It's called Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America. If you have a story about an encounter with a private equity in some part of your life, a good or bad, we would love to hear it. Email ideas at WPR.org. Do you work somewhere that has been, or did you work somewhere that has been taken over by a private equity company, or have you rented from them? They own a lot of houses. Have you yourself or a loved one been in a care center owned by one? Let us know. Email ideas at WPR.org.